So welcome to the most popular talk in the conference. Thank you for coming that early. You like me a lot. My name is Ahmed Ali Eldin. I am a postdoc with Prashant Shenoy at UMass Amherst. This work was mostly done by Pratik Sharma, who recently moved to Indiana as an assistant professor. He couldn't make it, unfortunately, due to some visa issues. And today I'm going to try to convince you that there are other ways to do transient computing, basically revocations. So a bit of background for people who are unaware of what transient computing is. Many cloud providers today provide services like spot instances, preemptible VMs, low priority VMs, where the cloud provider gives you that with no or very little availability guarantees. So these can be revoked. Probably with some signal before they revoke it, but a couple of minutes maybe they give you a warning signal, but then they get revoked, and so you have this transient availability. And then after that, they come online. The way that they sell this is that it's typically much cheaper than just going for a traditional cloud offering, sometimes up to 10 times cheaper. And people have been thinking, okay, how do we use this? And basically, most people would use it for low priority jobs, things that you can run, and you really do not care if they start like failing. But then, at the end of the day, many people in the community, including a talk that will follow me today, have been thinking about how to use that, providing some more guarantees on the applications and so on. So I am going to try to convince you that this is evil. It's not so good. So basically what you have is that you have resources that you get in green. These are your resources. The cloud provider has some demand on the resources. And then when that demand increases, typically that these resources will just go away. And then they become available once the resource pressure is reduced. So they tend to be surplus slash idle resources for the provider. If you're running a private cloud, you would also do these kinds of revocations for lower priority batch jobs, basically, and the resources will be revoked whenever you have an increase on the resource pressure. Well, preemptions are bad. Need I say more that you lose state, you lose things that you have been running. There is expensive computational time that you lose by when these resources get revoked, and you might end up starving the low priority jobs if you cannot control when these things are revoked, which you typically cannot if you're running on a public cloud. So basically, people have been thinking, okay, how do I handle this? And there has been lots of work in this community and in different communities also, where people have been trying to provide some form of fault tolerance over these low priority virtual machines. And that's typically using some form of checkpointing, trying to do some advanced voodoo magic to basically make sure that you have enough replicas of things and so on. But that comes at cost. It requires application modifications. Anyone who has actually tried doing that, it's not super easy. Many of these applications are very hard to actually get right when you modify them. And well, not all applications can tolerate revocation. So many of these applications will just, I mean, you cannot just change the application to make it revocable, especially legacy applications. So we started from the point where we thought, okay, let's rethink how we should do that. And the problem that we are trying to actually solve is basically from a provider point of view is that the provider is trying to reclaim some of the resources that have already been provided to the customers when there is resource pressure, right? The idea that we have is that there should be an alternative approach to this, and that alternative approach is that instead of outright revocations, you basically revoke or you reduce the amount of resources that you have given to your customers. I mean, from an application point of view, that's not a bad thing, because a low priority application can still run, maybe slower, but you're still running, which is better than not running. And basically, for many applications, you might not need application modifications, although that's not like entirely for all applications. From a data center point of view, well, you might be able to pack things better, because all of a sudden now you have these malleable, you have changeable sized virtual machines that you can just compress and just do better packing across the entire data center. And then you will get better throughput for the amount of resources that you're offering. So how do you deflate resources? This is not, I'm not going to claim that we are groundbreaking here, but I'm going to claim that this is something that has been studied in the community for a very long time. How do you actually shrink resources for an application that is running? So this is a figure that shows basically the JVM heap. So you have something like maybe you have two gigabytes of memory that you have allocated to your JVM heap. But then the time that you actually use it is in blue, and the time that you're not using it is in orange. So although you have allocated that much amount of memory, you're not always using it. So maybe if you shrink that memory, you can get lots of extra resources. Similarly, on operating system level, I mean, we have been swapping since forever. So, and you can page out memory and do these things. And from a VM over commitment point of view, from the hypervisor, you can basically start doing things such as throttling some of the virtual machines, or you can actually overcommit your resources. So the motivation is basically quite simple. Then we came to the idea of cascade deflation. So cascade deflation, our claim is that while there's lots of work on vertical scaling where you try to shrink a virtual machine, very few people have looked at this on a data center level. How do you do that on a wide scale level? And also very few people have looked at it as a multi-layered problem where you actually do the shrinking, not just on a single layer, so you're not just shrinking the application, trying to reclaim resources from the application, or just doing overcommitment, you're doing all three of them, and you communicate between all three of them. So what we are proposing is a collaborative approach across all levels so that you can regain as much resources as you can. And we refer to this as cascade deflation. So for example, if your target is to basically reclaim 4 CPUs and 4 gigabytes of memory from a running virtual machine, maybe you can get the application to release voluntarily. Basically, the application would just tell you, OK, I'm not using that. And once you have that, you have freed some resources, and then you can go for more hardcore, severe approaches where you are basically slowing the application by throttling or by doing operating system level shrinking. So the way that our system works, we built a system to actually do that. And you have a resource manager that uses bin packing to calculate under resource pressure. I have new virtual machines arriving, and now I need to make room for them. I'm at 100% utilization. How do I do that? Right? So the resource manager basically calculates a percentage or an amount of resources that needs to be freed and sets that target. Sorry. And then that amount is sent to a cascade deflation controller, which exists on every virtual on every server that you have. And the cascade deflation controller, using some policies, we have actually used linear across all low priority virtual machines, reduced them by this percentage. Basically, it tries to reduce the amount of resources used by the virtual machines that are running by shrinking all of them in parallel. And the first thing that the cascade deflation controller will do is that it will either send an upcall to the application, or it will actually communicate with the application. Somehow we have it implemented using REST that, well, we need to now reduce this much amount of resources. Now, not all applications will support that. Some applications will just outright ignore this. Some other applications will actually support that. I will show why you would want to do that later. And application level deflation is basically what everybody has been doing in the community, where we actually try to focus on a single application and try to reduce to make it basically fault tolerant in one way or the other. Then once these resources are released by the application, you have the operating system that starts releasing the relinquished resources from the application, and we use hot unplug of virtual CPUs and memory. And then finally, whatever is left that the application, the operating system could not get, we just collect this using overcommitment by using CPU and IO throttling. So the part which is like, I mean, hot unplug is something that has been done forever. CPU throttling is also something that has been done forever. So what we started looking at, or what what we mostly focus on is application level deflation. So we picked a bunch of applications. I'm going to talk about the different applications that we chose. And we started basically looking at them and saying, OK, how would you release resources in these applications? We used Spark as one application. Actually, Spark has, like, I mean, if you're unaware of Spark, of the sphere of Spark now, right now, there's like lots of new libraries that allows you to run machine learning, deep learning workloads, MLlib, BigDL, and so on. And we actually used MLlib and BigDL as our workloads. And this is an example of a very complex distributed application where actually changing the speed of one, even a single worker, can affect the whole computational time. So we started looking at, OK, how are we going to do that? As I said, some applications might just outright ignore what you tell them. So we started evaluating, OK, if we're doing that on the application level, in the application level and all the other two levels, we would be basically looking at how do we make Spark release some of the tasks, basically stop some of the tasks, relinquish the resources so that the operating system and the hypervisor can claim these resources back. It's quite straightforward. You just need to release the tasks. That way you can reclaim more CPU and memory. And another alternative that we looked at is if Spark ignored our basically everything that we tell Spark to do. There are trade-offs between both systems. The first one, basically, if you have self-deflation, you will reduce parallelism because you have released some of the CPU cores that you already are running on, which makes it basically slower. The second one will basically, some of the workers will be much slower, so you'll have stragglers. And we basically try to, part of the policy that we have is that the deflation controller basically calculates the expected slowdown using Spark, using self-deflation only, and using operating system plus hypervisor deflation. And based on that, we decide if we're going for application level deflation, everything application on the application level, the operating system level, and the hypervisor level, or if we are just going to go for hypervisor plus operating system level. There are two equations. I'm almost out of time. So memcached is the second application that we use, and memcached is easier to handle because basically you have this cache, a memory cache, where you can shrink the amount of memory. And from an application point of view, you can just shrink the amount of memory that the cache size for memcached, and then memcached will handle basically the LRU algorithm will handle what remains in memory and what gets out of memory. We also implemented application level deflation for JVM. We basically shrink the heap. First, we trigger the garbage collection, and then we shrink the heap to the actual and physical memory available for JVM. And we always start with the application level. Every time, we always start with the application level. So we did evaluate this using memcached with a bunch of workloads using JVM. We actually used the IBM J9 JVM, which actually supports changing the heap size dynamically. And we used SpecJBB for some Java application. And for Spark, we used MLlib and Spark BigDL. For MLlib, we used the alternating least squares, two algorithms. And for Spark BigDL, we also used CNN and RNN workloads. OK, so left-hand side, yes? It's memcached, basically. The performance of memcached, if we just do not modify the applications, shrink the resources using only operating system and hypervisor level deflation, and versus if we actually tell the application that we're going to shrink the memory, right? And x-axis, we have the amount of memory deflated, the amount of memory released by in percentage by memcached. Y-axis, we have k gets per second. So basically, if the application knows, then the application can do better things in terms of what remains in the cache and what gets evicted out of the cache, which basically means that you have less swapping. You also have less times where you actually need to go to fetch this data from disk. If you do not tell the, if the application does not implement application level deflation, then what you'll end up with is that the application has no clue, so it thinks that I have this much amount of memory, while actually this memory is partially on disk. Similarly, for JVM, you increase the amount of CPU and memory deflation, and you basically get lower performance. For Spark workloads, we actually evaluated against four things. So if you have cascade deflation, where you have all three levels, you have only self-deflation, you have self-deflation going also through the operating system and the hypervisor level deflation. If you have operating system and hypervisor level deflation, and if you just do outright preemption. And we look at the slowdown in the application, and it is actually, it was actually interesting for us that for Spark, in most cases, application level deflation did not really add a lot. So if you make Spark less parallel, you basically get lower performance than if you just let everything be slower proportionally with the same proportion. We also did some cluster-wide deflation evaluation, where we actually looked at you start with the low priority jobs, which is Spark running, and then Memcached starts and starts to run. And you see the total throughput of the system, and again, you do not evict, so Spark, so it actually runs better, I would say. And then we looked at the probability of preemptions, because basically, while we are trying to reduce preemptions, they will happen. I mean, if you overcommit your system too much, eventually preemptions will happen. So for how much overcommitment, cluster overcommitment percentage versus basically the preemption probability. And that's the right-hand side. There's lots of related work in the field, including a talk that will be later today, and also lots of stuff on autoscaling. So I hope I convinced you that we shouldn't be evicting virtual machines. Thank you. I'm happy that people are still sleeping.
Well, I have one quick question.
Yes.
So it seems that the latency of deflation is quite high, for instance, if you compare it to, I don't know, terminating a Spark VM, something like that. So how do you handle the situation where, for instance, you know, the application takes time to stop when you do deflation?
So it's comparable to the 2 minutes time window that you would get in when you're using, for example, spot instances. It's not much slower, but it also provides you with okay, it's running just slower. So this is not a one size fits all solution to everything. So.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.